Which brings us back to what I said before. There is nothing wrong in sex, provided it is done with love. And the people who preach against sex are preaching against the strongest thing in human life, and in my opinion they are just crackpots. I have just received a letter which asks me about people who are dying. Is it true, the letter asks, that people often smile when they are dying? Yes, they do. Anyone who has had much to do with the very ill and the dying can testify to this. Most people when they are at the point of death smile and look happy. They look, in fact, as if they are just being met by loved ones, which is indeed the case. When your time comes to leave this earth, then, be of good cheer, for you will be met, you will be helped, and there is nothing whatever to fear. On the other side of this life, at the other side of the curtain we call death, there is happiness, light, and joy. But wait for it, wait for it. You cannot die before your time, and if you try to you will get slapped back here in worse conditions. It's worth waiting for, though, it is a very pleasant experience as soon as you have left this earth. I have said quite a lot about doctors, said the Atwapeni. Yes. The average sort of doctor nowadays is just a businessman. He is out to get a living. He is out to make as much money as he can. So if you consider you have some illness which needs treatment, you should search around a bit and find a good doctor, find the best general practitioner you can. The general practitioner differs from the specialist in that the former can diagnose and treat almost any type of illness. You will hear reports of doctors if you will make inquiries, inquire of your friends, inquire about a doctor at a shop or shops, and if you find you cannot get on with the first doctor, well, good gracious me, there are plenty of them. Try another. You should be warned, though, that when you have found a good general practitioner, hang on to him. He's worth his weight in gold and platters of diamonds. When you have your good general practitioner, let him tell you if you need the services of a specialist. He knows the human body, its functions, and its malfunctions better than you do. So get to know a good general practitioner, get to know him and trust him. Tell him all your symptoms. Never use your druggist as a prescribing agency. A druggist may be exceptionally good as a druggist, but he is not necessarily qualified to be a general practitioner. So your doctor should be the one to diagnose and the one to prescribe, and the druggist is the one who fills the prescription. I am going to make myself frightfully unpopular here. I am going to advise you that if you are ill, definitely your best choice is an orthodox, common or garden general practitioner. Avoid spiritualistic healers and others who do not have scientific training. Because, just for a simple example, it is utterly easy to hypnotize a person into believing that he does not have such and such an illness or such and such a symptom. You can cure that illness, but unless you know enough about bodies and medicine to get down to basics, you can easily start up a far worse illness. By meddling with spiritualistic stuff, or hypnotic healers who do not have medical training, you can turn an ordinary harmless lump into cancerous tissue. So be very sure that if you are ill, you go to an orthodox general practitioner who has the necessary medical training. Many people are bemused by the different medical specialties, so for your reference let us mention just a few of the more common ones in alphabetical order. Allergy is the study of altered reactions of the body to certain substances. Anesthesiology is the medical specialty of administering anesthetics, in other words, killing the pain. Dermatology deals with skin diseases. Endocrinology relates to the study of the glands and their internal secretions. Gastroenterology relates to stomach and intestines. Hematology is the science of the blood. Neurology deals with the nervous system. It's hardly worth mentioning obstetrics and gynecology or ophthalmology, because everyone knows that the first is to deal with babies, etc., or rather their production, the second with female diseases in general, and ophthalmology deals with eye troubles. The nurse in the hospital says ENT, meaning ear, nose, and throat. If she was correct or highbrow, she would say otology, laryngology, and rhinology. Pediatrics is the medical science of dealing with children's diseases. Again, anyone knows what physiatry is, which is not to be confused with psychiatry. Physiatry is the science of physical reconditioning and rehabilitation. The proctologist could almost get an advanced naval rank, because unkind people refer to the proctologist as the rear admiral because he inspects the rear. That is diseases of the anus and rectum. Psychiatry is the science of mental diseases. Radiology is X-ray work. Thoracic surgery is surgery within the chest cavity. Urology for our last one, which deals with anything to do with the urogenital tract, that is the kidneys, the bladder, and the sex organs. So now you have some nice big words, and you know what your general practitioner means if he should tell you or one of your friends that you should see a so-and-so. Chapter 4, The night was cold, bitterly cold. On the shrubs across the road a thin layer of snow glistened and sparkled, giving a Christmas cake effect to little plants and small apple trees. Further across a small garden patch, a heavy diesel locomotive chugged and roared away as it waited for a distant signal to give the all clear so that it could drag its long, long line of freight cars on to New York, carrying thousands of new automobiles from Detroit, across Canada, and again into the USA. Further up the hill a horrendous clamor erupted upon the shuddering air as a recorded carillon of bells blasted from a modern church steeple with such volume that everything seemed to tremble and crouch in fright. From the nearby hotel came the sounds of late-night revelry as tipplers celebrated or bemoaned their luck that day at the local racetrack. Well-known bookies were smiling with joy, for that day there had been a killing. The talk came clearly. The clatter of bottles and glasses was sharp upon the night air, and the rattle and tinkle of the cash registers were a continual reminder that someone, at least, was enjoying prosperity. Across the long bridge spanning the railroad tracks, people returning from late duty in shops and factories sped homeward in gay abandon, oblivious of the risk of police speed traps. Further to the left a neon sign blinked on and off, with mindless robotic regularity, tinging the snow. Now blood red, then green, then red again. In the frosty air the stars shone hard and clear, not a wisp of cloud obscured the sky, not a strand of smoke impeded the light from the now rising moon. The air was crisp, crisp, and almost tinkling with a layer of frost. The old man, sitting motionless in the cheap and shaky wheelchair, suddenly moved and pushed the window wide open. The chilly air was like a tonic, like a breath of new life after the heat of the day, and the old man was immune to the cold but could not stand the heat. Sitting in the wheelchair in his pajamas, for the night was advanced, he wheeled his chair to a covered object beside the window. Taking off the cloth covering, revealed a powerful telescope. Quickly pushing it in position, he prepared to focus on the little points of light such illimitable distance away. "Do you want to freeze us all to death?" mildly inquired a voice from another room. "This is not cold," said the old man. "Tonight I think we shall be able to see the rings of Saturn very clearly. Do you want to come and look?" For a moment there was a rustling and a bustling, and then, first a chink, and then a growing amount of light as a door was opened in back of the old man's room. Mrs. Old Man came through and shut the door behind her. She, poor soul, was well wrapped up, and even had a blanket over an overcoat around her shoulders. The old man bent over his telescope, staring to focus in the general direction of the planet Saturn. Suddenly his attention was distracted by something. Quickly moving the telescope he refocused on something, and tensed with rigid concentration. "What is it, what is it?" asked Mrs. Old Man. "Is it an aeroplane?" The old man sat silent, his fingers moving over the focusing of the telescope. "Quick, quick," he said, "be ready to put your eye here as soon as I move. This is something you've wanted to see. Ready?"
"Yes,"
said Mrs. Old Man, and got ready to look as soon as the old man himself had got his head out of the way. She peered through the telescope, up into the night sky, following the path of a long bar like a dumbbell, sliding across the sky. A dumbbell lit at both ends, and between the two lights a whole series of flickering, blinking, twinkling, ever-changing colors. She breathed hard. "I've never seen anything like this," she exclaimed. But then, as she looked, the object came close overhead, and with the telescope she was looking right up underneath. A thing like a door opened in the object, and from the door came a number of bright vehicles, glistening globes. They shot out of what was obviously a mothership, and then extinguished their lights and disappeared in all directions. The mothership then extinguished her lights, hovered for a moment or two, and then shot heavenwards and was seen in dark silhouette diminishing in size against the bright night sky. The noise continued from the hotel. No one had been disturbed. Cars continued to speed across the railroad bridge. The returning travelers were too intent upon their driving. In the cab of a great diesel locomotive, the engineer smoked his cigar and read his newspaper by the cab light, oblivious of the great ship which was there for him, and for anyone else, to see. To the left, the mindless, robotic neon sign changed from green to red to green and red again. The world went about its business, looking down at the works of man, ignoring the strange things that flew in the night skies as they had flown for centuries past, and would fly for years to come until, in the end, the people from space decide to land on this Earth once again. They have been here before, you know. Earth is like a colony. Earth is a testing ground, a seeding place where different types are put together so that the gardeners of space can see how they get on together. Don't believe all the rot about God being dead. God is very much alive, and God is using this Earth as a testing ground, and letting little humans learn upon Earth for the much greater things that will happen in the life to come. The little town, perched sleepily on the side of the placid river, basked in the late afternoon sun. Shoppers slowly meandered along the street, window gazing first, and then having a not too strenuous mental fight that they should decide what could be afforded and what could not. The stores and the supermarkets were not at all crowded, for this was a slack day in the shopping week, but people wandered about more as an excuse to be out in the sunshine. Down by the coal wharf, men were unenthusiastically dealing with the self-unloader of a coal ship moored alongside. There came the desultory and staccato noise of a bulldozer shoveling mounds of coal, ready to be loaded into an endless stream of trucks and taken to great factories nearby. Just off the parking lot, a mongrel dog of indefinable ancestry pawed lethargically among the refuse. A well-aimed potato caught him on the flank and he rushed off howling, showing the only turn of speed seen in the little town that day. Down by the river's edge, some boys were paddling without taking their shoes and socks off. They had an old wrecked boat, with the timbers rotten and worm-eaten, and they were lazily engaged in play having to do with Morgan the pirate. On the other side of the street, the man in the radio shop was just changing a record, giving a welcome relief from the blasting volume of sound which normally poured from that area. Someone, possibly a housewife, possibly a farmer from further inland, gazed without curiosity up into the sky, wondering, no doubt, if our weather would keep up so that the crops could be harvested. Gazed up and froze into shocked immobility. Passers-by looked at him for a moment, and smiled to themselves, then turned and looked up into the sky. They too became shocked. More and more people gazed up into the hot sky, gazing, gesticulating, pointing. A babble of sound arose. Cars screeched to a halt and drivers and passengers poured out to look upwards. From the river's bank, the boys stopped their play and looked up. One tripped and fell backwards into the water filling the old wrecked boat. Yelling with alarm, he leapt to his feet and he and his companions raced for the market square with water squelching from their shoes, and with the one boy dripping water from the seat of his pants. A man dashed into a house, and was gone but a moment before returning with a pair of binoculars. Feverishly he put them to his eyes and with trembling fingers focused. The babble of talk increased. Quickly the glasses were snatched from him and passed from one person to another as they all gazed up. High in the sky, beyond the height at which aircraft would fly, there hovered a large silver pear-shaped object, with the larger part pointing down and the smaller part pointing up. It hovered there, huge and in some alien way, menacing. "That's not a balloon," said one man who had recently returned from the Air Force. "LF, it was a balloon. The larger part would be at the top instead of at the bottom." "Yes," exclaimed another, "and it would be drifting with the wind. Look at those high alto stratus clouds passing by it, and yet it is stationary. The little town buzzed with consternation and speculation. High above, unmoving, inscrutable, hovered the enigmatic object. Never varying in position, making no motion, no movement of any kind. Slowly the day came to a close with the object there as though glued to a picture of the heavens itself, there, unmoving, unchanging. The moon came up and shone across the countryside, and above in the moonlight the object loitered. With the first early dawn it was still there. People who were preparing to go to work looked out of their windows. The object was still there as if a fixture, and then, suddenly, it moved. Faster and faster it went, straight up into space, and disappeared. Yes, you know, there are people in spaceships who are watching this world. Watching to see what happens. Well, why do they not come and talk to us like sensible people would? You may ask, but the only reply is that they are being sensible. Humans try to shoot them, and try in any way to harm these UFOs, and if the UFOs, or rather the people within them, have the intelligence to cross space, then they have the intelligence to make apparatus which can listen to Earth radio and Earth television, and if they watch Earth television, well, then they will think they have come to some vast mental home, because what could be more insane than the television programmers which are foisted on a suffering public? Television programs which glorify the unclean, which glorify the criminal, which teach sex in the wrong way, in the worst possible way, which teach people that only self-gain and sex matters. Would you dive into a fish tank that you could discuss things with some worms at the bottom of the tank? Or would you go to a colony of ants laboring in one of these glass tanks designed to show the work of the ants? Would you go in there and talk with ants, or with any of these lesser creatures? Would you go into some glass hothouse and talk to some experimental plants, ask them how they are doing, saying, "Take me to your leader"? No. You would watch, and if an ant bit you, you'd say, "Spiteful little things, aren't they?" And be careful that you didn't get bitten in the future. So the people of space, whose one-year-old children would know more than the wisest man on this earth, just watch over this colony. A very few years ago I lived in Montevideo, the capital of Uruguay, a country which in South America lies between Argentina and Brazil. Montevideo is upon the River Plate, and ships of the world pass by going to Rio de Janeiro or to Buenos Aires, or come into the port of Montevideo. From my ninth-floor apartment I could look out across the river. Right out to the South Atlantic beyond the confines of the river. There were no obstacles, no obstructions, to the view. Night after night my family and I used to watch UFOs coming from the direction of the South Pole straight over our apartment building, and coming lower so that they could alight in the Mato Grosso of Brazil. Night after night, with unvarying regularity, these UFOs came. They were seen not just by us, but by a multitude of people, and in Argentina they are officially recognized as unknown flying objects. The Argentine government are well aware that these are things are not the product of hysteria or fevered imagination. They are aware that UFOs are of surpassing reality. The day we landed in Buenos Aires, a UFO came in and actually alighted at the main airport. It stayed for several minutes at the end of a runway, and then took off at fantastic speed. I was about to say that all this can be read in the press reports, but that is no proof of the truth of it, because too often the press alter things to suit themselves or to get more readers, and I have no faith whatever in anything which is printed in the daily press. So, instead, I will say that this UFO landing is the subject of an Argentinian government report. Having seen these UFOs night after night, and seen how they can change course and maneuver, I state emphatically that these were not satellites flashing across the sky. The times that satellites can be seen varies, and is known to the minute. The times that we saw these other things were different, and in addition we have also seen the satellites. The night sky of Montevideo is remarkably clear, and I had a very high-power telescope of the type used by the Swiss customs officials, which ranged from 40 magnification up to 350. This world is under observation, but we need not be upset by that. It is sad indeed that so many people always fear that those who observe wish to do harm. They do not, they wish to do good. Remember that there are ages and ages going back into history, and various civilizations and cultures have appeared and disappeared almost without trace. Remember the civilization of Lemuria, and the great civilization of Minoa. Who has been able to explain the enigmatic statues of Easter Island? Yes, someone once tried to and wrote a sort of a book about it, but it's not necessarily accurate, you know. Or, if you want to go to another stage, how about the Maya people? Can anyone say what happened to the Mayan civilization? Each of these civilizations was a fresh culture placed upon the earth to liven up stock which had become dull and, what I can only term, denatured. There is also a very, very ancient theory, or legend, that countless years ago a spaceship came to this earth and something went wrong with the ship, it could not take off. So the people aboard, men, women, and children, were marooned here, and they started another form of civilization. It is extremely fortunate that the Hebrew books of the Old Testament had been translated into Greek long before Christians came upon the scene, because the early Christians, just like the present-day ones, tried to alter things to their own gain. We can, then, find out a lot about ancient history from the Hebrew books which have not been tampered with by Christianity, but even they leave us uninformed about the Mayas, the Easter Islands, and the Etruscans. These were civilizations which flourished more than 3,000 years BC. We can know that because Egyptian hieroglyphs can be traced back to the year 3000 BC, and some of these, traced upon temple walls and in tombs, give information about earlier and very great civilizations. Unfortunately, around about 200 years after the start of Christianity, knowledge of much of this had been lost because of the manner in which Christians altered history to suit themselves, and because, with the rise in power of Christianity, Egyptian temples were closed down and no longer were there educated priests who could understand the hieroglyphs. And so for several hundred years history remained in darkness. Later research indicates that many thousands of years ago a great race suddenly appeared in the land of the two rivers. These people, now known to us as the Sumerians, have left little of their recorded history. Actually, according to the Akashic record, the gardeners of the earth decided that the stock on earth was becoming weakened by inbreeding, and so they placed upon the earth others who also had to learn. These others are known to us as the Sumerians, and a particular branch of the Sumerians, almost like a family, became the Semites, and they in their turn became the earliest form of Hebrews. But that was about 2000 BC. The kingdom of Sumeria was a truly mighty kingdom, and brought to this earth many advancements in culture and science, and many different plants. Certain branches of the Sumerian culture left the founding city and moved to Mesopotamia in round about the year 4000 BC. In addition, they bred and gradually populated areas of high culture. It is interesting to know that when Abraham moved with his herds from the city of Ur in Mesopotamia and went to Palestine, he and those with him brought legends which had been family history for thousands of years. They brought with them stories of the Garden of Eden, a land which lay between the Tigris and the Euphrates. This had been the common ground of many, many tribes and people who had been expanding, as their populations increased, over what is known as the Middle East. Eden, by the way, actually means a plain. The book of Genesis was merely a digest of stories which had been told by the people of Mesopotamia for several thousand years. Eventually civilizations became absorbed. So it was that the Sumerian civilization, having leavened the stock of earth, became absorbed and lost within the great mass of earth people. And so, in different parts of the world and in different times, other leavening cultures had to be set down, such as the Etruscans, the Minoans, the Mayas, and the Easter Island people. According to the old legends, the 12 tribes of Israel do not altogether refer to the people of earth, but instead mean one tribe which was the original people of the earth, and the 11 tribes, or cultures, which were put down here to leaven the original which was becoming weakened by inbreeding. Consider, for your own amusement, various tribes. The black people, the yellow people, the white people, and so on. Now, which do you think is the original earth inhabitant and which are descended from the Mayas, the Sumerians, the Etruscans, and others? It makes interesting speculation. But there is no need to speculate because, I tell you very seriously, that if you will practice what I have tried to show you in all my books, you can do astral travel. And if you can do astral travel, you can know what is happening, and what has happened, through the Akashic Record. The Akashic Record is no television show where we are interrupted by a few words from our sponsor. Here we have the utter truth. Here we have absolute exactitude. History as it was, not as it was rewritten to suit some dictator who did not like the truth of his early life, for example. By visiting the Hall of the Akashic Record, you can find the truth about the Dead Sea Scrolls, those scrolls which were found in 1947 in certain caves by the Dead Sea in a district called Qumran. This collection of scrolls belonged to a certain order of Jews who, in many ways, resembled Christians. They had a man at the head who was known as the Teacher of the Rightful Way. He was known as the Suffering Son of God, who was born to suffer and did for humanity. According to the scrolls, he had been tortured and crucified, but would rise again. Now, you might think that this refers to the leader of Christianity, Jesus. But this Teacher of the Rightful Way lived at least 150 years before Jesus came to the earth. The evidence is definite. The evidence is absolutely precise. The scrolls themselves were part of a library of this particular Jewish sect, and the library had been endangered by the Romans, and some of the Jewish monks had hidden certain scrolls, probably the only ones that they had time to save. There are various ways in which science can determine the age of any reputably antique object, and these scrolls have been subjected to those tests, and the tests indicate that they are about 500 years older than Christianity. There is no possibility that they were written after the advent of Christianity. It follows from this that it would pay to have a really sound investigation into the Bible and all religious papers, because the Bible has been translated and retranslated many, many times, and even to the experts, many of the things in the Bible cannot be explained. If only one could overcome religious bias, religious prejudice, and discuss things openly, one could get down to basic facts and the history of the world could be set right. There is, I repeat, a good way, and that is to consult the Akashic Record. Now, it is possible for you to do this if you first become proficient in astral travel, but if anyone tells you that he or she will go into the astral for you and look at the Akashic Record provided you pay him or her a certain sum of money, consider him to be a fake, because these things are not done for money. I hope I have said enough in this chapter to indicate that the UFOs are real, and they are not a menace to anyone on this earth. The UFOs are merely the gardeners of the earth who come here from time to time to see what is happening to their stock, and they have been here so much more frequently, and in much greater numbers recently because mankind has been playing around with atomic bombs, and risking blowing up the whole dump. What a terrible commotion there has been about UFOs, hasn't there? Yet, UFOs are mentioned very extensively in the Greek legends and in the religious books of many different forms of religious belief. In the Bible, UFOs are mentioned, and there are many reports in ancient monasteries, such as, when the monks were sat down to lunch at midday, having their first meal of meat for many weeks, a strange aerial object came over and panicked the good brothers. UFOs have been showing increasing activity during the past 50 or 60 years because the people of Earth have been showing increased hostility towards each other. Think of the First Great War, think of the Second Great War, in which pilots of all nations saw what they called Foo Fighters, which were indisputably UFOs watching the progress of battles. Then take the matter of airline pilots. It doesn't matter which airline, it doesn't matter which country, because airline pilots all over the world have seen many strange and even possibly frightening UFOs. They have talked about it extensively, too, but in many Western countries there is a heavy censorship about such things. Fortunate it is, too, or the press, with their usual distortion, would twist everything up and make the harmless into something horrendous. It has usually been said, oh, well, if there are UFOs, why have not astronomers seen them? The answer is that astronomers have seen them, and have photographed them, but again there is such a censorship that people in prominent positions are afraid to talk about things they have seen. They are afraid to talk for fear of getting into trouble with the authorities who do not want the truth known. They are afraid to talk because they fear that their professional integrity will seem to be in doubt, for people who have not seen UFOs are extremely virulent in their hatred for those who have.